right, back at it here on ESPN 1000. Xander and Hanley joined by Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times. From the press box at Soldier Field, I do believe. How's the sod looking to you, Mark?
Well, actually, I'm not in yet. I'm outside looking at the historic columns of Soldier Field right now, trying to enjoy as much of this day as I can, to tell you the truth.
Well, trying to figure out how we're going to put a dome on that.
I can probably guess that the field doesn't look too good. That's just based on experience.
a veteran scribe's view on that. Hey, Mark, we were just talking about the Roquan Smith thing, and it seems like in the last 3 days, it's really gone off the rails here. How is Ryan Poles handling this in your view? I mean, this is his first big test as a GM, and it seems like some reports are saying that, you know, he's trying to backload a contract and maybe not guaranteeing as much money. And then Mike Florio has a report that someone on Roquan Smith's behalf is dialing for dollars, calling around the league, trying to get a trade that they're not authorized to get. It's really gotten messy here.
Yeah, I think Ryan Poles is handling it like a guy who has all the leverage. And also for a player, I think it should be noted, who has never played in this defense. I think this situation is kind of evolved the way it has because he's kind of been lost in the transition between the Pace regime and the Poles regime. And this is, you know, Roquan has every right to think he's as valuable as he does because of what he's done in the previous defense. But this is a new defense, this is a new team, and the Bears have every right to want to see Roquan put up Darius Shaquille Leonard numbers in this defense before they really plunge. And I think that's why there's the backloading, because I think they want a quick out in case Roquan isn't quite an easy out after a year or two, in case Roquan isn't exactly what they want in this defense. And you know, Roquan wants to be paid like the best linebacker in the NFL. So I see both sides. But to answer your question, I think I'm a little surprised that rookie GM is playing it, I think, correctly. I think any GM worth his salt would be using the leverage he has for a player who is under contract. That's the key. Yeah. Roquan pretty much has to play this year, whether he's happy or not. The fines that accrue with this and accumulate are going to be prohibitive, and if he doesn't play six games, his year of service is frozen. He'll still be a fifth-year player next year. He really has no leverage. So the only question is, does he come in? Can the Bears find a way to make him happy and still keep him? Because I don't think trading, frankly, is going to be a good option, because if you look at the teams that they're looking at as possible trade partners, most of them, their first-round pick, even now, but especially with Roquan Smith, is not going to be like in the top 10, which is where Roquan was drafted. So that's not going to be a really great situation for the Bears. I don't think Poles wants to get started. He wants to accumulate draft capital, but not lose on the deal. And so I think the only option is for Roquan to come back and play this season. The only question is, how happy can they make him?
Mark, it seems as though he's overplaying his hand just a bit here, being under contract. But how much of this has to do with him not having professional representation?
I think I would say probably more than I thought. Yeah, I think that's been a negative. And I don't quite get it, why guys don't, especially in these situations, don't use an agent. I mean, I can't believe it's just to save money. He's going to be guaranteed $50 million no matter what he does, just about.
Right.
And so to chintz on that does not seem like that would be the really prudent thing to do. So I think I'm mystified, I guess, is why he's chosen that tack, and maybe he's getting bad advice. He did fire his previous agent, who had led him down, I think, a negative path or a bad path in the first holdout that was not unnecessary. So I kind of got that. But to not go to any other new representation, I think, has been a negative for the player. For the most part, those things generally work out worse for the player. Sometimes the player does benefit. I think Laramie Tunsil might be a good example. I can't remember. Richard Sherman, not. And a couple others, not. And so I just don't think it's the smart move at this point in time of his career. So, again, to answer your question, I think it's been a detriment. It's been a detriment to the situation on both sides.
So on the field today, it does look like the offensive line has shaken out to the point where they found five, a starting five. Is that legit? I mean, they're not going to. Is this the group that they're going to move forward with as long as they stay healthy? And if so, is that going to be serviceable for Justin Field?
Well, we'll see about that. That's actually a key point for today because, you know, they're only going to play a couple series, I imagine. But Braxton Jones at left tackle, this is one of those situations where you see a guy, you like him in the draft, he shows you something, you move out a couple of, drafted players from the previous regime to make room for him. He shows you something, but now he's got to play at a different speed. And then he'll have to play at another speed at the start of the regular season. So this is probably a bigger test for Braxton Jones than anyone. But just that unit as a whole, because on paper it looks shaky. That, you know, we've seen before in Chicago, you can have offensive lines that don't have a lot of name recognition, but still end up being pretty good. So I'm not saying they're not going to be good, but that's going to be a big key is to see if they can. But right now on paper, it doesn't look great. They still need Lucas Patrick back. He was there. He was actually their big free agent signing and a big key for that offensive line. So that's going to be one place to look at right away is the offensive line, and particularly Braxton Jones. Can he handle it? Because that would be a great sign if a guy can come right in, pick out a guy in the fifth round who could be a starting left tackle in the NFL with a second-year quarterback. If they have that kind of confidence in Jones to do that, and if he can handle that, that's just a good sign for the future that Ryan Poles has the kind of intuition and acumen about offensive linemen that's expected to make the difference between his operation and what Ryan Pace did, because that's where they really faltered in the end.
Yeah, the idea of Justin making improvement for the season, as much as we'll see him today, what are we looking for? Just him getting the ball out of his hands and staying upright, I guess, would be a measure of forward momentum.
You might be kidding, but you're exactly right. Yeah, so that's I have very low expectations for Fields and for the offense. I just want to see them complete the passes that when Getsy was in Green Bay, put the Packers in advantageous second and third down situations that really allowed Aaron Rodgers to be Aaron Rodgers. They don't have Aaron Rodgers. They're not going to. But one of the secrets of his success was that they had an offense that either ran the ball on first down or used those quick outs or screen passes, whatever, to get either if they were in second 10, they were in third and three. If they're in first and 10, they get in second and three. And that's really all they're doing at this point. That's really all you can really measure at this point. Are those just functional operational plays? Can the Bears even execute that? Because we saw from the Nagy regime, that was a huge negative. They just could not. Mm-hmm. They could those simple plays that other teams run, the quick out to get you 4 or 5 yards on first down. Yeah, they just couldn't do that very well. They get 1 yard, and then they'd be in second and nine. So really, I want to see if Luke Getsy is at least getting on the ground floor on this offense by at least allowing them or getting them to execute simple plays. Because really, we're not going to see Justin Fields in the offense very long. So you're not going to be able to make any grand judgments about where the Bears are headed. You really got to look at it. Or I'm going to look at it, speaking for myself, just pretty simply, and just see if they can do the very simple first step first on offense in Chicago.
And Cole Kmet is not going to be out there today, and they're saying it's not a serious injury, but he's not out there. To me, it's a make or break season for Cole Kmet, and there are a few guys like that, right? But how important is he to this offense and to Justin Field?
Well, he is because he's supposed to be kind of a two-way tight end, and he's supposed to be a really good blocker and facilitate the offense downfield and get open and be open and make plays with the ball. I mean, he's not Travis Kelce, but he can certainly be Kyle Rudolph. I guess that's where he stands. And he will be a good litmus test for if this is a good offense or not. I always say an open tight end is a sign of a good offense. You saw it in Green Bay with Favre all the time. It's the same way with Rodgers. You see it with almost any offense. Kansas City, when the tight end is open, that means you've got a good offense. So Cole Kmet can facilitate that like not very many tight ends can. And so if you see him making plays, that's a sign that they're actually going to have a better offense than they've had that they had under Matt Nagy.
So the one position we're not talking about a lot, because I think that we feel somewhat secure, would be running back. David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert. How much do you think, how much action do you think they'll see today? And what should we be looking for there, Mark?
Well, I'm not sure if they're going to play, if either of them will play a whole lot. Mm-hmm. They're going to be but they will be a tandem. And I think this season is about establishing them as interchangeable parts. And it goes back to the whole, I keep going back to this, but it goes back to the Green Bay thing. Can they emulate the Green Bay offense? Because Matt Nagy, he kind of said he wanted to establish the run game, but he could never get into any kind of groove. I mean, he would literally go from 7 rushes in one game to 37 in the next and overcompensate and just never got any kind of balance. So I'm not so sure if it's the running back. I think just like in some of these good offenses, you just plug somebody in there, then you're generally pretty good. I think that's what's going to have to happen with this offense. So Montgomery is outstanding, and I think Khalil Herbert is very good. And I think they'll both be productive in a good offense. But again, that's going to be a sign of how good is your offense and can you actually run the ball on first down and run the ball when teams know you're going to run the ball. And also, and that's the key for Getsy, because I get the sense that he is a little better at kind of living up to that, and he understands from his Green Bay experience just how important it is not only to just say you're going to run the ball or run a certain amount, but have a rhythm to it. Don't just shy away from it. When it's not working and that kind of thing. So I think I'm not sure if I'm looking at the running backs per se, but I'm looking at running back production for sure.
Before we let you go, Mark, I have to ask you about Justin Field. The offense has been what you might call shaky so far in camp. But the injuries to wide receivers certainly come into play. But what have you seen in Justin Fields that he has been doing better this year? And what is, where's the worst still need to be for hopefully a franchise quarterback?
Well, I'll be honest, to me, and I'm not a film watcher, but the improvements have not been overt or easily discernible. I have talked to people who tell me, his footwork is better and it will make a difference in executing this offense and getting quick throws and things like that. We've seen some of that, but again, it's against a Bears defense, so you never really know. I'll be honest, it's going to be a huge key for the Bears. It's the big question of this year is can they develop Justin Fields without really giving him the supporting cast he needs to develop. That's the trick. They say they can, and they're certainly skeptics. So I'm not sure what to tell you on Justin Fields, because if he fails, a lot of people are going to say, it wasn't his fault, and that'll be a problem for Matt Eberflus and Luke Getsy and Ryan Poles at the end of the year if that ensues. But I really don't know. One thing about Justin Fields that has been noticeable is he's running a lot. I mean, he runs a lot, and without having receivers open, he's running a lot, and that won't work in a real game. So if you're going to be looking for anything, you really want to see, and even in these few short plays, does he have the rhythm of that of the offense, and that he knows when to run, when not to run? Because if you look back at it, that's where Trubisky failed. He was great at it in 2018. Mm. I think he averaged like 6.2 yards per carry, and he lost that knack. He lost something. Something happened. He lost that instinct of when to run, when not, and that kind of started his downfall. So that's really, based on what I've seen in training camp, I'll be honest, that's what I'm looking from Justin Fields, even in this little cameo today, is does he know when to run and when not to? Because that's with this offensive line, with this offense, I think his legs are going to be a big part of it.
Mark Potash from the Chicago Sun-Times, thanks so much for joining us here on ESPN 1000. When you get into the stadium, make sure to grab some green spray paint and kind of help out with the field and paint those divots, okay?
I take no responsibility for the field at Soldier Field. That is entirely a McCaskey Chicago Park District operation.
Well, they might need all hands on deck.
you're right about that. I'll be happy to help out in that case. I love Soldier Field.
You're the best, Mark. Thanks,
all right,
man.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mark.
It.
All right,
appreciate
thanks, guys.
It.
Talk to you later.
All right. Lots to dive into. I look forward to this, Brian, to see what the new regime can bring, even though it's going to be a very, very small test today, being preseason and all. And we'll dive into that and more here on ESPN 1000 when we come back.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
I would like to play significantly amount of plays, but just to get a glimpse of like how Luke calls plays and just how the feel of the game will be. Just how, how we talk about like how things will go and actually how they will go. So it's good to talk about things and it's a good thing to hear things. But actually, how will they go when actions are and bullets are flying? So it'd be a good sense of how things would be called. And then long down the road, we'll get to like a second or third down, and I'll know exactly how he's thinking. Like, okay, we're about to call this, so I don't even have to think about like what he's going to call. I can actually like get to the line of scrimmage and actually look at the defense and how they're going against us. So.
Bears, is that wide receiver number one? We'll find out. Who are you most excited to see play beyond Justin Fields today, Brian Hanley?
Well, it's interesting. Mark Potash is nothing but honest, and he's been doing this a very long time for the Chicago mm-hmm. Sun-Times at a very high level. It just took me back a bit when he said Justin Fields, whatever he's doing well or doing better, is not necessarily overt or obvious. I had to take a breath there.
In practice, right.
Yeah, right. Because you need to see him. It needs to be overt and obvious as we move forward here. Maybe.
Yeah, but how much do you see in practice, though? See, that's always what comes to mind for me. I mean, you know, it's not real game action. So but hopefully what he talked about were subtleties that maybe weren't as obvious that will become obvious during a game.
Yeah, he said, you know, film, people watch film, break it down, tell you the footwork is there and all that. And that's terrific. Mm-hmm. Darnell Mooney just told you that what he's, you know, he wants to actually, it's great to talk about and draw up a game plan and whatever handful of scripted plays you have, but to, when it becomes second nature, right? And that was the biggest thing, one of the biggest things with Matt Nagy. There was no rhythm to the offense, as Mark said.
There,
one play didn't set up another play. He didn't, even when the scripted plays, every coach worth a damn probably scripts 25 to 30 plays to start a game, right? And what did the scoring in the first half look like for the Bears under Matt Nagy? It was disastrous. It was, you couldn't have made that up. It was such, I mean, you were lucky to get a field goal before halftime. The good news is, Mark Sander, is that I don't know what exactly Matt Nagy did or did not do to prepare for his first head coaching job in the NFL. But the fact of the matter is that Colleen Kane in the Chicago Tribune wrote that this is what Eberflus did since January, because this is his first job being the head guy.
Yep, that's right.
And he's spent 15 to 20 video sessions with Bears Director of Research and Analysis, Harrison Ford, to prepare for various game situations, running through end of game, end of half, and challenge scenarios, among other things. He also had video sessions with the coordinators to work out their communication for situations and has consulted with NFL officials for rules education. And then he's ran through game scenarios Tuesday at Family Fest to actually put some of that in practice. So, I mean, the guy, one thing I've taken away from Matt Eberflus, and I haven't seen him, you know, we haven't seen him in even a preseason game. We'll see him today, obviously. He seems like he over-prepares, right?
He's buttoned up. He's buttoned up, very corporate-like, over-prepared, ready for anything. And you know that wasn't the case with Nagy. It certainly seems like it wouldn't have been. I don't know. Maybe it was, but it certainly didn't pay dividends for him.
It didn't translate, right? It didn't translate to game day. So, I mean, maybe Matt did exactly the same thing or even more than Matt Eberflus has done since January.
But it's not our problem anymore.
No, but I mean, but that if in fact he did none of that or not nearly enough of that to even check in with, you know, here are all the possible scenarios to challenge. You know, when do you throw that flag? When don't you? You know, when do you waste a timeout? When not? But to get that communication with everyone involved, to be able to think on your feet because you've gone through dry runs of game situations. Mm-hmm. So you're not taking, you know, what do I do now? You're not kind of having a brain freeze. I mean, how many times do we hear, well, the headsets weren't working? Well, sometimes I didn't know the head was working, let alone the headset with Matt Nagy. And, you know, Matt Eberflus just looks like he is more grounded and prepared, whether that actually translates or plays out or ends up being that he's a coach of a playoff team or a Super Bowl contending team. Time will only tell.
312-332-3776. I've got to say, overall, I'm most looking forward to the overall team approach under Matt Eberflus. And I'm hoping that is going to be something that's very obvious to where we can all just kind of breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, maybe this isn't going to be a tremendous season, but we can see how a coach really runs a football team, we can see this is moving in the right direction. And I'm hoping that we get a sense of that early on today as the noon kick features the Kansas City Chiefs and the Bears from Soldier Field.
You want to believe that smart people are running the operation, whether, you know, and you heard Mark Potash say that Ryan Poles for a first year GM is using his leverage. And we heard Ryan Poles talk about that on Tuesday, that, you know, he's got to be a big picture roster guy, and it can't be about one player, even if that is your best player. So you want to believe that they got it right this time with the GM and with the head coach and with all the coaching staff. You know, when Poles and Eberflus got together and put together staff, it doesn't mean it translates in one season. They're still 6.5 over under win team in Las Vegas for a reason, because they don't have enough talent and it's not an overnight fix.
Right.
But you want to believe that smart people are now running the operation, and within time, hopefully sooner than later, that's going to pay dividends on the field, and it's going to, you're going to be able to point to them and say, yeah, I knew these guys got it, and they do have it.
You know, Brian, I think it will be as simple as seeing some sort of different approach, maybe an offensive rhythm to where, okay, we're not winning games, but we saw some things under the Nagy regime that we hope we'll never see again. And just to not see those things is going to be a step forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you call a timeout and all of a sudden a guy jumps right away on the offensive line, you got a penalty after a timeout, or there's confusion after you just talked about something for a couple minutes, and it looks like no one really was paying attention. Undisciplined play, penalties, lack of effort, loafs, lack of tackling, you know, basic football things. That's you got to start somewhere with a foundation, right?
That's exactly right.
Vince Lombardi used to, day one of every training camp, used to hold up a football and say, gentlemen, this is a football. I mean, that's how basic it gets. And then you go from there.
And the bar is low compared to what we saw before. So today, I think I have great hope that we will notice the difference immediately. Then it's just about building on top of that. 312-332-3776. It's Hanley and Xander. We're here for another half hour. We'll take your phone calls. You want to talk Bears? You want to talk Sox, baseball? I almost wish it was Will Ferrell that was imitating Harry Carey. At least it would have made a little more sense at the Field of Dreams game.
Okay,
we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about when you jump in here at 312-332-3776. That would have been more entertaining, right? It would have made more sense, even though it was satire.
Ryan Dempster does a bad one too, right? A bad Harry Carey. We got Cub thoughts because Jason Hayward is no longer going to be part of the Cubs moving forward. And, you know, Jesse Rogers had a terrific Cubs column on ESPN Chicago's website. And Tom Ricketts is now an answer by statement guy. He's not available. And that's disappointing because whatever you think of current ownership on the north side, Tom Ricketts didn't used to hide. And to me,
he was the guy that was walking in the stands, and now he's hiding. That is a great disappointment. All right, we'll talk about that and more here on ESPN 1000 when we get back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
All right, preseason game number one, kickoff noon. Bears and Kansas City Chiefs. So who are you most looking forward to seeing play today and how they can make an impact aside from Justin Fields? 312-332-3776. Bear fan Bob joins us here on ESPN 1000. Hey, Bear fan Bob.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
So, you know, I give my preseason tickets away to my neighbor. I hope she has a great time. You know, I don't go down there for preseason games, so I'm going to watch this on TV. And I'm looking for one thing and one thing only. I want to see an offensive line play like a big boy offensive line. You know, things like blocking, opening up holes for the running back, maybe holding back the defense for a little while so you can complete a pass. Because when the offensive line shows cohesiveness and they do things like that, all things else will fall into place in time. Guys, those are my thoughts. Have a great day, huh?
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, we always appreciate hearing from Bear fan Bob. He's not wrong. I mean, that's a core need, and Justin Fields is going to need some people he can rely on to give him time. which will amount to performance and confidence. It'll just feed the beast, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, as Mark Potash just said, to play off of what Bear fan Bob said, you know, Mark's looking to see if he has the knack of when to run and when he can make the most of running, and not just running for your life, right? I mean,
this, right.
This offensive line doesn't,
there's a difference.
Doesn't give him the confidence to take that second to kind of, you know, discern what he's looking at. If he's just taken off because he feels like he's in fear of his life, that's not going to be working out for anybody.
Right. 312-332-3776. You're right. There is a difference in running and running for your life. And we've seen Justin run for his life way too much. And I think he would be most appreciative if running was just because it's part of a play. We've got Sean from Bolingbrook wants to jump in here on ESPN 1000. Hey, Sean.
Gentlemen, how are you? Thanks for taking the call. Two quick things. First, I'm just looking forward to seeing an offense that doesn't look vanilla. You know, a lot of motion. Just not the plain Jane offense. That's what I'm really looking forward to. And the second question I had for you, or the first one, is FanDuel's got the Bears now at 5.5 for the over and under. It was 6.5 a couple of days ago. So I'm on the app now, staring at it while I'm listening to you boys. Would you take the over or the under? It's at 5.5, and I appreciate you taking my call. I will zip it and let you boys talk.
Thanks, man. Wow.
Yeah,
they dropped
you.
A full game because they were – the over-under was sitting at 6.5 forever in Vegas, even though the under was weighted like minus 125. You had to pay a little bit more juice to take the under. It's now dropped. Is that because Roquan Smith's situation? I mean, I don't know what would have.
Well, what's the other variable that would have affected that at this point? It kind of seems like it might be, right?
Well, I mean, I'm a contrarian. So to answer your question, it was Sean, right? Answer the question, at 5.5, I'd bet the over. This schedule is not the toughest schedule by any stretch of the imagination. And I do believe that they have a competent coaching staff. I'm not saying they're going to win 10 games or 8 games, but I think they can win 6 games out of 17, I would hope. So I would take the, I would hop on, it's 6.5, I was a little leery. I wouldn't, but 5.5, I think they got 6 games in them. So
I think you're right. I think that would be a solid bet, kind of jump on that now, but it is curious that change, probably the Roquan Smith situation. But remember, he has to play this year. He's under contract.
Yep. If he doesn't play 6 games, he's going to be sitting there for another year under Bears control. And you don't want an unhappy player going.
It seems like that would be counterproductive. Right.
Oh, it would be awful. It would be the worst case scenario if you know, they can't. I mean, you arguably, I know Ryan Poles has all the leverage here, but arguably you have to have this thing figured out by game one of the regular season. This can't spill into the regular season. It won't work. It won't not serve anybody at that point.
And as we were talking about earlier with Mark Potash, you know, it's interesting the idea that they're at this terrific impasse in that the Bears want to see him in this new defense, and he wants to get paid before he steps into this new defense. And you could see that he wants more guaranteed money. But again, the first thing out of the gate, I think he should consider having professional representation. Maybe he can hire somebody, have them jump in and fix this mess, because not only do agents look out for your best interest, but they also isolate you, the player, or the performer, if we're talking about music or whatever, from management. You want to retain that good relationship. They're that buffer.
Yeah, I mean, I told you, guys like Jack McDowell would sit in those arbitration hearings, and everyone told him not to do it. But, you know, he was a stubborn guy, and he was a very proud guy. And when you go into those things, they don't tell you how great you are. They tell you all the things you don't do very well, and that's why here's the number we're offering you instead of the number you like. It's all business, and business sometimes can get messy, but certain guys, you know, believe that they just can come in and say, you know, 5 years and $100 million and it sounds about right. And I want this guaranteed and they're not backloading it. And Ryan Poles is like, whoa, we'll give you some of that, but we're not giving, it's a negotiation, right?
Right. But, you know, and what you were saying about you know, you only hear about what you haven't done when you're in negotiations. When you hire an agent, they tell you how wonderful that you are.
Exactly.
And then they go and fight the battle for you. So this is really probably the most, this is the craziest part of it, because it seems to be obvious that he should have some professional representation. And there's a cost to that. But if he's guaranteed $50 million, I mean, if it were my money, I'd be all right with that. How about you, Brian? I think you would.
Yeah. Especially if I was 25 years old. But that said, I mean, that is generational wealth. But you understand that he is one snap away from not having a football career. So he needs.
Does he understand that, though? That's the question.
Well, I think he does. That's why he doesn't want a backloaded contract. I think he wants, you know, he wants it evened out or maybe front loaded.
312-332-3776. Where do you weigh in on this whole Roquan Smith issue? Ryan Poles no doubt has the leverage, and I think Roquan has overplayed his hand a little bit at this point in time. But then again, he does have a point. Guaranteed money does help when you're playing football, because you are one snap away from not playing football anymore. And if you want to jump in and also let us know who you're looking forward to seeing today, the pregame at the kick is at noon. Who are you looking forward to seeing? Although it will be limited for a lot of the starters, what do you look to see aside from Justin Fields? That's too easy. 312-332-3776. When we come back, we are going to wrap up the poll, set you up for the White Sox game, and take your calls up until 11 here on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Zander and Hanley on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
Three one two three three two three seven seven six. It's Xander and Hanley on ESPN 1000. Peggy and Dion jump in at 11. We're here till then. We've got a Twitter poll to wrap up before we get out of here.
Hey, if you tell me about this car show. Yeah. Tell me about your car.
Oh, yeah. I have an old Pontiac, and I'm in part of a club on the board of the club and all this kind of stuff. And we have a big thing to do every August, and it's up in the Crystal Lake area. So we'll bring the old girl out today. And just
what kind of Pontiac?
It's beautiful.
I mean, what year? What model?
It's a 1969 Grand Prix. Ooh. And if you look at those things, I just love the styling. I've been a big fan forever, and it's kind of a rare bird in that it's a 4-speed manual car. They only made like 270 of them. Wow. So when I was able to find it, it was pretty much my holy grail. It's not perfect. It's got a lot of battle scars. They call these survivor cars or unrestored cars. But you drive straight, and a lot of fun to drive. So
are you a gearhead too? Do you get underneath the hood?
Oh yeah. I've rebuilt a top of a motor from another Grand Prix that I had that I've since sold. So yes, I greatly enjoy that.
That is really impressive. I mean,
yeah, it's fun. I've been doing a lot of work to the car to get her ready. So yeah.
What color?
Triple black, black interior, black exterior. Yeah.
Wow. There you go. That's
and
a it's statement
and get this and get this. It is. If you remember, Brian, you're old enough to remember the old manual steering cars that didn't have power steering.
Yeah.
This car is a 4-speed and manual steering, and it was ordered that way by a farmer up in northern Wisconsin because he did not want power steering because he drove tractors all day. So you have to be careful when you're coming up to a right-handed turn, and you have to downshift, and you have to muscle that wheel around the corner. Wow. It's quite fun to drive.
So how often do you get it out other than car shows? Do you just tool around in it, or is
special? Right. I'll take it around for joy rides maybe once a week or something like that. Maybe a tank of gas every summer, and then she gets stored away for the winter.
How many miles are we getting on the muscle car?
I don't even want to calculate that. that is not part of the equation. I am not even going to bother with that.
Oh man. I can't imagine what that would look like when you hit the pump.
I'll tell you something. I've waited. She's been on fumes, and I waited until yesterday, the last possible moment, for gas to come down to a decent amount.
Under $4.
Because if I would have filled it up 2 months ago, there's just no way. it would have been $7 a gallon. Because, of course, she has to get the full octane.
He would have been pulling the Jay Cantu shift today where he's working from like 6 in the morning to right, 10 at night. Yeah.
To afford the joyride. Yes, I would have. Yes,
well, that's cool. So it's at Crystal Lake, and when is it?
It's today and tomorrow. Started actually yesterday at the Holiday Inn in Crystal Lake. For anybody who wants to come and see Old Pontiacs, it's at the Holiday Inn on Route 31 and, what is that? Three Oaks Road.
Terrific. And all day, I assume?
Yeah, all day today, all day tomorrow. We have a chance of rain today at 50% at about 4 p.m., so that's going to chase a lot of people away. But the great thing about having an unrestored car is I'm okay if it gets wet.
There you go. Get some Rusty Jones on the seat, and you're ready to go.
Rusty Jones.
I sold cars for like 6 months out of college when I couldn't find a job initially. And you'll be, I mean, I know all the tricks of the trade of what they do to, you know, they might give you the car at $100 or $200 over invoice, but once they try the add-ons and, you know, I don't think Rusty Jones is a thing anymore, but it was back in the day.
No, it's not.
Yeah. It was back in the day, you know, you had a couple hundred for that.
And Z-Bart.
Oh, Z-Bart. Yeah.
That was your competition for Rusty Jones.
Yeah. So whenever I need to go buy a car, I have an idea of what's legit.
Oh, so you're the person that they do not want to see show up haggling for a car because you know all the tricks of the trade.
Well, I mean, it's a lifetime ago, but I don't think those, you know, but here with COVID and pandemic, there's no negotiating. I mean,
no, there's not anymore. No. You take what they have or you get nothing.
And you take the price they want to tell you.
You like it.
My brother was out looking for a car and he couldn't find the one he wanted. And he ended up with a car that he's very happy with. But he went to one dealership and the guy's like, he's like, what's this $7,000? He said, that's a COVID tax. He's like, what? It's pure profit because he wasn't going to pay it, but somebody was going to pay it. Is they're desperate to get a car because there are none out there or there were.
It is a seller's market for sure. And I can tell you somebody that I know just saw their car on the used lot with more miles being sold at the price that they bought their car new.
Oh,
the same one. Yes. That's the shocker. So if you as somebody who works on cars and enjoys it, if you have a car that you think, oh, I should replace it. No, maintain it, keep it. This is not the time to do something like that.
Yeah. I've got a 2014 Grand Cherokee, but it's only got 70,000 miles on it.
Oh, you're good. That thing will run forever. I've got a 13 Grand Cherokee.
Yeah. And I think I saw the average age of cars on the road now are like 12 or 13 years old because of, a lot of things we're talking about. People are hanging on to them longer. Yeah,
certainly. And the cars in recent years, can't say this for cars in the 80s, but in recent years, they have been built to drive further. So all you have to do is maintain them. Sometimes it's real tough to open the checkbook, but you maintain them and you're in better shape than if you're trading it in every 2 or 3 years. So White Sox today, Lucas Giolito, he's on the mound. Last time he was out, he looked a lot better than he had previously, but it's been kind of up and down year for him. He's part of our Twitter poll, which we'll wrap up before we get out of here. But he's up against Matt Manning for the Detroit Tigers. He's a righty. He's seen four games started. He's got no decisions, so he's 0-0, but he has an ERA of 2.25. Offense has been so hard to find with the White Sox, and it's just so puzzling. We will remember this year forever, Brian, as the offense that should have been, but never was.
But never was nearly consistent enough. And we before we get out of here, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Fernando Tatis Jr., the news of yesterday.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Former property, and now, he's been out because of a motorcycle accident. He hasn't played this year, but they're hopeful that they would have him back. He'd started a rehab assignment. But the old ringworm medication, according to him, got him with a PED, a drug that was banned on the major league list. He said he was treating ringworm, but that be what it is. 80-game suspension.
80, yeah.
No pay. And for a team that just went out and got Juan Soto and has designs on – making a run at a World Series, that's not the news they were looking for in San Diego.
That is a major, that's a major kick in the pants. And the idea that he didn't consult somebody is just beyond me because, you know, having a large contract like that, I know if it were me, I would think twice about taking vitamin C. I'd run it past somebody.
Well, seriously,
to make sure. That's a lot of money in the balance. And thankfully, they went out and got those assets because, you know, having him with the team, it's like they bought a world championship, but he's not going to see the field in a good long time.
Yeah, they're sitting there in the last wild card spot. But they obviously were making a big play and trying to make a run here. But you just said it, that the fact of the matter is they're, you run everything by the people in the clubhouse, the medical people. They have the list. They can check it. They can check anything you're putting in your body. And I'm with you. If it was orange juice with vitamin C in it, I'd say, is this okay? Just yep. Because of what the penalties are.
And his statement, made all the right apologies to all the right people. But the fact remains, he is not going to be used. And I just saw on Twitter yesterday, I had to laugh out loud. People kept saying, so did the Sox win the trade?
Oh,
James Shields for. And obviously, the answer to that would be a big no, because James Shield isn't playing and neither is Fernando Tatis Jr., but he will come back. James will not. All right, we've got a Twitter poll that we need to wrap up here, and this is all about the biggest disappointment for the White Sox this year. We kept Tony's name off of it because we're just talking about players here. We had only four choices. We could have added more, but your choices are Tim Anderson, Yasmani Grandal, Yoan Moncada, or Lucas Giolito. We had a lot of action, a lot of write-ins on this. Jake, how does it look for this poll?
I think this is the most action we've seen on a tweet. And last week, I thought it was pretty good, too. But this is the closest one as well. Yoan Moncada takes it 37.2%, but not too far behind Grandal. Pretty obvious choices.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's Grandal. And here's why. Because this guy has been a supposed power hitter, and his power is just gone. And Moncada... I don't know. For some reason, Grandal stands out a little bit more for me than Moncada, but I certainly understand with people saying Moncada, because there's a lot of youth and a lot of time wasted so far waiting for him to reach what we thought was his potential. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We need some offense, and of course, they will take the field tonight. It's an early start, 6:10 at Guaranteed Rate Field. We've got the Bears at noon. And Peggy and Dion next here on ESPN 1000. Brian, I'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. sharp for more talk about everything that's going on today.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Jake. We appreciate it. This is ESPN 1000.